Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
There has been a fascinating conflict playing out as President Trump and his administration have been trying to cut spending, but spending that was already authorized by Congress. And so can he do it? Can he not do it? The battle has been playing out in court, and here in the Twin Cities, one of the parties to a lawsuit against President Trump and the administration has been the Minneapolis Foundation. And R.T. Ryback is here to talk about a win that they got in court, which it's a win for the foundation, but really it's a considerable amount of money that's going to go out to all sorts of communities throughout the Midwest, right?
Right. The lawsuit that we won means that the Minneapolis Foundation is going to be able to distribute $50 million of grants for environmental work across the Great Lakes states. And another group in the Middle Atlantic and another one in the Pacific Northwest also got the same amount. The lawsuit was necessary because we wound up not looking for a lawsuit, but looking to answer a request the federal government had. Last year, the federal government put out a bunch of money to really get to grassroots communities that have environmental issues. And so we applied. The Minneapolis Foundation was really happy to get it, along with REAMP and the Midwest Environmental Justice Network. And what we wound up doing then was getting all set to go out to give really good grants to things like water systems in Hackensack and food sovereignty for Native communities and fresh food for food shelves in Frogtown and, you know, really basic, good, clean water, clean air work. And then in January, when the new administration came in, they did an AI search on the word environmental justice and just canceled any grant that had that word in it. Well, we tried to talk reasonably to them. That wasn't successful. So we sued, and the judge said, yes, the federal government, the Environmental Protection Agency, needs to right away release $50 million to the Minneapolis Foundation so that we can get that out to people doing great work in Minnesota and five other Great Lakes states.
We are seeing this sort of question play out as the administration has tried to freeze funding or freeze grant money. And we've seen it in all different and whether you agree with the idea that we should spend less as a federal government or not. I do think people can suspend their political beliefs for a moment and say, if Congress said we're spending all this money and then all of these organizations around America that are feeding people, that are solving environmental problems, all these things planned on it, and then to yank the rug out without Congress voting, anybody having debate is, well, it sucks. Like it's terrible for planning. It's terrible for our communities.
Right. We didn't
have a process. If you want to have a process, fine. If you want Congress to cut budgets, fine.
Well, and, you know, the thing about it is we didn't intend to have the Minneapolis Foundation enter into a political issue. We really simply followed the rules. The federal government said they had money that they wanted people to grant out. We got that money. We followed all the rules that they made, which includes the fact that once Congress passes a law and appropriates money, the law says that goes forward. No yeah. president, no nothing can stop money that was allocated for Congress. So we followed their rules. They broke their rules. The judge said they broke their rules, and now we're going to get the dollars. But what that means is it's a little bit like Lucy with the football, you know.
Right.
The idea is that we operated and got everybody working super hard at our shop to try to get this money out.
Because you're getting hundreds of applications, and this money wasn't just designated for Minnesota. It was for a number of states in the Midwest.
Right. All the Great Lakes states. So Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois.
And they gave you guys the money because?
Because we had a great application, and we applied with a couple really good organizations, REAMP and Midwest Environmental Justice.
But your team like also has experience in sort of grant allocation.
Yeah. The Minneapolis Foundation directs out $120 million a year. So we know how to get money out to not only people, but to the really good organizations doing the work. And I'm the CEO of the Minneapolis Foundation, but I won't make a single decision on this. All these decisions are made by community panels out in those communities who know the area and really highly effective nonprofits. And sometimes governments, like our grant that's going to go to Hackensack, I believe, is with the city government of Hackensack, and that's for water systems. And when you really look at some of these grants that are going out, think about the people in Ohio who are going to get lead out of their homes. Right. Think about the farmers who are going to be able to do better land practices with this. So we're incredibly excited to be doing this work. And I think it's a really good example in this moment where there's a lot of political drama around, but we had to make a decision about whether we would just fold our tent and give up when we were given a grant and the law was broken. It was clear the law was broken. The judge said that. Everyone knew that what the law is. So we could have said, well, the law was broken, but we're just going to sheepishly go away and let down all these people. We stood up. The people at the Minneapolis Foundation did incredible work to stay on their task. I just so admire the team that did this for us, because imagine, like, if they said, hey, Jason, you're going to go on the radio today. And then 2 seconds before you went on the radio, they shut it off, turned it on, shut it off, turned it on. You'd lose right. your focus. Our team didn't. And now people get the money they deserve.
When you look at getting involved in a fight like this, obviously, I think our listeners know that, you know, you were the mayor of Minneapolis. They know you're a Democrat. They know you're no fan of Donald Trump. But the organization is bigger than you and your politics. Was there concern about, like, I don't know if we want to pick a fight with a president who has shown, you know, this is not my opinion, this is the fact. The fact is that retribution is part of the equation.
You're right. It's a tough call. And, you know, one of the things
you don't want people to think the Minneapolis Foundation is like just a DFL kind of.
Absolutely not. And
because it's not. It's a nonpartisan.
Yeah. The Minneapolis Foundation is not the R.T. Ryback Foundation.
Right.
And I don't. There of the 120 million that goes out, I control about 300,000. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's how it works. We have money that we control over the 108 years that people have given it to, and we put that into education and economic empowerment. But individuals open up funds there. So the Jason Fund, and you would say, I want to give away X amount of money. We'd listen to what you need, and then we'd help you get it out. So dollars from the Minneapolis Foundation go across the ideological yeah. spectrum. They go around the world. They go to some things I agree with and some that I don't. The only thing we don't agree to send out is when it's with a group that's a hate group.
Yeah.
And we have a whole process on determining what a hate group is. That happens maybe once or twice a year. Mostly it's money that goes any nonprofit, anything that moves in the ecosystem, nonprofit ecosystem in this
right.
community gets something from someone at the Minneapolis.
But that reputation is important. And so when you decide yeah. to engage in a lawsuit, it is a conversation, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And our board of directors was really great about that. We thought long and hard about this because
yeah.
No one wants to stick their neck out in these days, right? And you want to be able to continue to do the work the Minneapolis Foundation's done for 108 years without getting into a big squabble. But at the end of the day, I would say collectively our board said, well, we made a commitment to people out there who have no power, who have no access, who've got no ability to get money elsewhere, and they're counting on us to get the lead out of their house, to get their fresh food, to get, you know, clean water, all of that. And we thought, it's not about the Minneapolis Foundation. Let's take a risk. Let's stick our neck out. Let's stand up and do it on behalf of a whole lot of people who are now going to have a better life because we didn't fold.
R.T. Ryback here. I would be remiss, obviously, in this moment in Minnesota, where this weekend we had such an unthinkable tragedy. And I know you knew Melissa and Mark Hortman, and we're still praying and thinking about the Hoffmans as they, Yvette and John, as they recover. But I wonder if you have any thoughts about, you know, we're all kind of going through our own conversations and self-analysis of are we making things. I worry that we make politics too personal
yeah,
now.
Yeah,
that it's sure. You can't just disagree with someone. You have to hate them. And everything is so personal. I wonder what sort of observations or thoughts you've had besides the sorrow and the horror.
I'm, you know, completely gutted by the loss of the Hortmans, and the Hoffmans, thankfully, are going to survive. I was at the vigil last night, and I had a nice conversation with Melissa's parents, who are wonderful people, and doesn't surprise me because she was a wonderful person. I have a strange image I've had of her a lot, and it's standing with me and a whole bunch of other politicos next to microphones. And the reason I have this image is that when you go to these events where 57 different politicians say the same thing one after the other, almost everyone leapt for the microphone. I would include myself. Not Melissa. She was doing the work, and she was doing really good work, and she really leaned into all that. But I had a conversation with her pretty early in her career when I didn't know her all that well at the time, but I just called her and said, I think you should run for Congress in the 3rd District. And here was this person who had now won a race and all that and was clearly could have potentially won, but she said, no, I want to stay home with my family, and I want to have a life balance as I raise my kids. And so I thought of that when I – this is really – I thought of that when I saw her kids do that incredible statement.
Oh,
you know,
the list
just so
of ways to honor. Oh, my gosh.
And so those of us who've been in politics know how hard it is to raise a family, and she did that, and she won't be able to see the results of that, but she leaves us with just incredible legacy. And her husband is one of those people who, like a lot of spouses, like my wife, sacrificed a lot to be able to loan her out to the people of Minnesota. So I don't have anything chipper to say about it. It just is hideous. And I do think your point is right, is that these are human beings who do these jobs, and you may not love them all, but you don't have to hate them. And you don't, I don't know where to go with that.
Yeah. Sorry. Thank you. No, it is, you know, I've had those moments myself, and I only knew her in a professional manner.
Yeah.
But this is just, I don't know. All I can do is control myself and the way I interact and the way I raise topics and talk about things. Yeah. And we've always tried.
And you do such a good job with that. And
to
it's
be
so
that way.
Important. Yeah.
And sometimes you think, like, I don't know, man, like, does it matter? And I think it does matter. You just have to keep modeling it as best as you can. And we're all going to screw up and we're all going to get too heated sometimes. Yeah. But if we can sort of inflect on that.
You know, last night was really powerful to just be at the Capitol. All the lights were on the Capitol. It was really stirring and people had candles. But what really struck me is I had all of these conversations, a lot of people I knew, a lot of people I didn't. And there is a near unending supply of good people all around, but I know in the state of Minnesota. And when you see something like this, you automatically say, what have we come to? Who are we as a people? There is a real dangerous underbelly of hate going on right now. And it has been in different parts of our history. And part of the reason for it is we're uncovering a lot of the hate we never talked about. So there's a whole lot in there.
Yeah.
But lean into the fact that there are all of these really decent, good people who just simply care. And it's a little like driving. If you look at the curb, you'll hit it. If you get too focused on the hate and the hatefulness, you don't go down the middle of the road and see exactly the decent people out there. And that's kind of where I'm trying to put myself.
Yeah. Really good. R.T. Ryback, we appreciate it. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks a lot, Jason. We'll see you.
Got a sausage battle. Man, nothing worse than a couple of sausages kind of getting into it. You know what I mean?
Excuse me?
Unless you're into that. It's none of my business. None of my business, Dan Cook. So, which team are you on in the Battle of Hormel and Johnsonville? Now, I lived in Milwaukee for a couple years in sort of spitting distance from the Usinger's sausage factory. So, if Johnsonville wants to hire me, I'll tell you how I've been a Johnsonville brat guy since I was a kid, you know? But as far as I know, we're not like trying to lock down Johnsonville. So I'm on Hormel's side. I'm on Minnesota's.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, isn't that kind of a no-brainer?
Yeah, of course. So the headline in this Brooks Johnson story in the Minnesota Star Tribune that just posted an hour ago or so, Minnesota's Hormel sues Wisconsin's Johnsonville alleging stolen sausage secrets. Former employee. So imagine this. I mean, we worry about corporate intrigue, right? And corporate secrets. And back when I was at Channel 4, you know, all the other stations in town wanted to hire me because they're like, I want to know what Channel 4's big secrets are. Good question. What are they up to? Is what they're saying. So everybody wanted to hire me. And I said, I have integrity. I will not. I don't know why you have this expression like everything I'm saying is a lie.
Oh, no, I believe it.
Yes, of course you believe.
I just believe there's also a number that could have been bandied about.
Oh, you're saying my integrity. Yeah, there is for sure.
I think we all have our limits.
There's
a number.
There's a number.
Yeah.
Is there an inverse? There's some sort of mathematical.
Some sort of equation that would.
One of you math nerds will know. So apparently, like, Johnsonville is trying to hires away some guy who works at Hormel. And, like, no offense to these two cities, right? But Johnsonville, where is Johnsonville based? It's Sheboygan Falls, right? Like, aren't you going to pick Austin, Minnesota over Sheboygan Falls, Wisconsin?
Every day and twice on Sunday.
Right. Come on. So Johnsonville hires away this guy from Hormel, and Hormel guy is like, I got the sausage king. I got the guy who knows more about sausage than most of us have ever forgotten. So they bring in this 25-year veteran of Hormel, and this guy, sausage guy, apparently has sausage for brains, if you're to believe the lawsuit, because before he left, now what do you do if you were going to leave CCO Radio?
Yeah.
Like, you're leaving to go to where, what radio, where would you dream to go? Another radio station.
Why would I dream of any place other than WCCO,
my
Jason?
God,
I don't.
Please.
I don't know.
So, like, you're leaving to go produce a celebrity chat at My Talk.
Okay.
It's like you and the gals in the afternoon. I don't know. I don't even know. Whoever the Lori and Julia. Do you know who it is?
I haven't the foggiest idea. And
I don't know.
Hopefully.
I'm sure they're
you
nice.
Would rescue me from that idea in the
I have
first
no
place.
No idea. But. Well, they think when I want someone to produce celebrity chit chat is Dan Cook.
No. It's a big time news podcast that I'm going to produce.
All right.
How about that?
Would you email yourself to your personal account, say the equivalent, whatever the news talk radio equivalent is, of product formulas, processing procedures, acquisition, target information, and marketing strategy information?
No. I would save my contact list. That's on my work account.
Yeah, that's probably fine.
But I don't, that's not proprietary information.
Legal. I think that's legal.
I would not, you know, whatever sales information that we have upstairs I would not grab that.
Trade secrets.
No.
Do we have any secrets at this joint?
I'd be kind of surprised if we did, to be honest with you.
I feel like we just say it all on the radio. But this guy apparently, and this is what the lawsuit says, so we don't know. But
it's
like.
Alleged.
Are there really that many sausage secrets? It's like you got some pork, you got some salt, you got some. I mean, what are we doing here?
What kind of ratios, Jason? kind of measurements are we talking about?
Are they so insecure in Wisconsin that they have to steal our formulas?
Clearly.
Pathetic. Everybody's on Team Hormel. Johnsonville, so overrated. Yeah, that's right. Sick and tired of it, Wisconsin. Get your own damn original idea. Stop stealing our people and stealing our sausage recipes. Nobody's stealing the sambusa recipe from our next guest, Russia Eats, on Juneteenth. News of a sambusa empire. starting with the schools, graduating to Midtown Global Market. Should be fun. We'll talk about the Sambusa Empire coming up.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Heart Starts Pounding, Horrors, Hauntings, and Mysteries is a weekly podcast hosted by me, Kaylin Moore. Check out Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And To Russia Eats is brought to you by the Minnesota Pork Board. Today we are talking about a couple of entrepreneurs who started with a fairly small Sambusa operation. And now it's not so small. I'll tell you that much. Not so small anymore. It is called Hoyo, and they sell Sambusas and sauces, and now they have a location that you can show up to Midtown Global Market as well. Maryam Muhammad and Matt Glover, the co-founders of Hoyo, are with us here on CCO. It's so good to have you both here right now.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Talk a little bit about the genesis of Hoyo. How did this get started? How did you two come together?
Yeah, well, some mutual friends introduced us. I was living in South Minneapolis and very interested in Somali food, Ethiopian food. And I was working at Bar La Grasse at the time, so really excited about customer service or hospitality. And so then I was kind of combining Somali food, hospitality, entrepreneurship, learning that Somalis loved entrepreneurship. And some mutual friends introduced Maryam and I, and they said, Maryam is amazing. You have to meet her. And we met, and I shared some ideas about, like, what if we did, like, restaurant consulting for Somali restaurants and things? And she said, no. If you're going to do business in the Somali community, you need to do frozen Sambusa. And I said, well, I'll think about it, and thought about it a lot, and I loved it. And I said, I'll only do it if you do it with me. And so that was kind of how the business started.
And this was 10 years ago or so?
2015, we first met. I think we incorporated the business in 2016.
Maryam, what were you thinking when this white kid from Bar La Grasse comes up to you and wants to start a focus on Somali food?
I know. You know, Matt, when he came to me and he told you why he wanted to see me, what was in my mind was many refugees, especially women, when they come to the U.S., they have so much strength and things they already know. And I was thinking, why not use their strength? And since they know how to make sambusas, why not create jobs that helps them to do something they already know? And we learn from them. They teach us, and we teach them the job skills and the trainings that we need for them to be part of the mainstream. So that's what I was thinking. I was thinking using Somali mothers who have been doing sambusa all their lives, because sambusa is a traditional food in our culture, and every Somali woman at a young age knows how to make sambusa. So that's what I was thinking.
And that's what you hired. You hired other, because Hoyo means
mother.
And so you hired mother.
Yeah, mothers.
Smart.
Yes. Yes.
And that started with the frozen Sambusa. You made two varieties, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you worked on the formulation of that together?
Yep.
And that was Maryam's sister. Maryam introduced me to her sister Halima and said, Halima's the best Sambusa maker. So I said, well, let's try it. We went into Halima's kitchen and wow, they were delicious. And we thought, well, this could work. The thing about Sambusa is they're very labor intensive, which is why frozen makes a lot of sense.
So talk about that, because some of our listeners, and if you're watching on YouTube right now, I'll hold one up. But almost every culture has some version of this food, whether it's an empanada, Sambusas you see in a number of different cultures, Indian, Somali, all sorts of different Sambusas. But it's a pastry type wrapping filled with whatever, right?
Yes.
And Maryam, Somali, the traditional Sambusa would have what in it?
So we will have usually beef and fish.
Beef and fish.
Yes. Yeah. Mostly these are the ones. Now we have, I think, beef and lentil, and we're going to have chicken soon. And we know here fish is very expensive.
Yes.
So we're not rushing to have fish. But in Somalia, fish is the cheapest food you will buy, because we have the longest, Somali has the longest coast in Africa. And so people eat mostly meat. They're not big fan of seafood. And so seafood is the cheapest food you can buy in Somalia. So that's why fish.
That's why that's used.
Yes. That's why that's used. It's the cheapest food.
The benefit of freezing it, of course, is it then you have a nice, quick, easy dinner. But also to make this from scratch, fresh, probably it would take a while, right?
It takes forever. One of the things that we do and that Halima insisted on was the traditional folio. And folio is the wrapper. So she loves making that from scratch. And it's hard to find a Sambusa in Minneapolis with folio made from scratch. And so that was it, but it takes so long, and we had to buy the right equipment, and you have to hand, you know, knead it a little bit. And
to have
and
it, so, is that texture that you're looking for? Mm-hmm.
And if you even go now and try to buy Sambusa from anywhere, it's different than ours. And what makes the difference is actually the folio, the crunchy, handmade folio is different than buying one that's already made, like tortilla, and you use to make your Sambusa on that. So they taste so different.
This is very different from other Sambusas I've had.
Yes, yes.
Yep. Mm. And then the cumin and the coriander.
Mm-hmm.
Very traditional Somali seasoning.
Yes.
It's beautiful. The wrapper on this, there's a crunchiness to it, and then a lightness though, where it's almost flaky inside.
It is.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, and try with the sauces. So there's two sauces,
and these are available. Hoyo, part of how you got your start is you got into stores and you got into the schools, right? Is that sort of how the beginning was?
Well, our original hypothesis was Somali mothers are going to want to buy this. This was 2015. They didn't want it. They wanted to make their own. So we went to Seward Co-op, and they said, we'll give you a shot. And they said, but you got a demo. So we did a demo at Seward Co-op, and we sold out within an hour of everything we had. And so then our hypothesis flipped and was like, okay, let's go to the grocery stores.
Yes.
And the co-ops took us in like crazy. But right, Seward was the first
Seward was first. Yes. Oh, that's so cool. I know you're going to Lunds and Byerly.
Yes.
But already more than 30 Minnesota school districts. Serve your Sambusa to 300,000 kids.
Yes.
What is that like to know that 300,000 school kids who maybe wouldn't be exposed to Sambusa at all or Somali food are having your sister's recipe?
I know. It's so fun because we hear so many stories. And I remember I was in St. Cloud, and St. Cloud gets Somali Sambusa. And all the Somali kids are excited because all the American kids, you know, they're all Americans, but young children who are not exposed to any Somali culture they love the taste of it, and they come to the Somali kids and say, how do your mother make it? I love it. Where can I find it? And so it's really a hit in these schools. And sometimes they even told us that when they're having Sambusa, the days they're having, the absentee is almost zero. Everybody wants to come and eat Sambusa.
I love it.
Yes.
All right, stand by, because I want to talk about your new location in Midtown Global Market. Matt Glover and Mariam Muhammad from Hoyo, H-O-Y-O, Sambusa. We're streaming live on YouTube, so you can see these beautiful faces. And you can see me eating Sambusa in the background, too. We're on WCCO Radio on YouTube. Darusha Eats continues in just a minute. All right, Darusha Eats with a conversation about a couple entrepreneurs. They're making frozen Sambusas that you can find in local grocery stores. Hoyo Sambusa. It's hoyosambusa.com is the website. Soon coming to Lunds and Byerly's.
Mm-hmm.
And how many states are you in now?
Five
states.
Mm-hmm.
Grocery stores all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And the reaction has been what?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Actually, every co-op, except a couple of co-ops here, it's the preferred item to buy if you go to their stores.
And how much does it cost usually? I mean, everyone has their own price, but there are what, five Sambusas in a frozen package?
Yep. And around $13.99.
Yeah.
Yep.
And now we're actually switching, making it four. This store we're talking at Global Market has four now.
A four pack.
Which is under $10.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Nine something.
What? You know, when you look at Sambusas, and we're talking with Mariam Muhammad and Matt Glover from Hoyo Sambusa, which has just opened a big kitchen production facility at Midtown Global Market on Lake Street in Minneapolis. Is the Sambusa, is that normally the meal, or is that like an appetizer, or how is that traditionally eaten?
Well, traditionally in our culture, you usually eat during fasting. You know, we fast once 1 month in a year, Ramadan. Mm-hmm. It's called Ramadan. And after you break the fast, that's what you eat, because you need both protein and carbs. And that's the idea behind it. So we eat it as a meal when it's that. But in, and then at weddings. And I think most places now in America, the Somalis, the way they eat it is like hors d'oeuvres. So
right.
You invite people, they come to your house, and before you give them the heavy meal, you give them sambusa. So sambusa is part of everything you are doing in your meal now, if you are inviting people. If you are alone in your home, usually some people may not do it because it's a lot of work.
Right.
But you usually do it when you are inviting people on their weddings, holidays. These are the times when people often use sambusa. But you can go, I think there are stores, Somali places that can sell, right?
Mm-hmm.
That sell now, and people go and eat every day. In our country, it was not the case.
Not the case.
Yes.
Matt, this new 3,000 square foot commercial food processing sort of kitchen that you have now at Midtown Global Market, what was the reason to go to Midtown Global Market, and how is it? How's it been going?
Yeah, well, so for context, we started at VEEP, which is Volunteers Enlisted to Assist People. It's a food shelf in Bloomington, South Minneapolis, and it's a test kitchen.
Right.
It's not a food manufacturing plant, and we just by brute force turned it into kind of a manufacturing plant, but it was tiny, it's tough, it's, you know, unit production is really important in food manufacturing. And so we were looking like crazy for a commercial kitchen, and we got in touch with the Global Market, and they just loved the idea, and neighborhood development. And
amazing.
Yeah, yeah. They just said, we think we can make it work
here. How many folks you have working for Ahoyo now?
Almost 24.
Wow. Ah, it's so good. I'm so great to see you both. You can find Ahoyo in all sorts of grocery stores all over Minnesota, the co-ops. There's a spot on their website. And you can buy it now at the produce store, Produce in the Market.
At the Global Market.
At the Global Market.
And a restaurant inside Global Market.
All right, look for it when it shows up at Lunds and Byerly soon. It's called Ahoyo. Congratulations to both of you. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you
so much for having
Matt
us.
Matt Glover and Miriam Muhammad. It's freaking delicious, I'll tell you that much. And their sauces are killer, too. So you'll look for these in grocery stores as well. CBS News and local news coming up. Drive time.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong, because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled-up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.